Hello and welcome to the Colibri Games podcast. I am your host, Nate. Marina has the day off. So we're going to be jumping straight into the awesome and expansive world of live ops. I have two amazing guests with me today. Christian Zahler, who is the Director of Engineering, Platform and IT Services here, and Christopher Ling, the Director of Data Platform and Analytics. We're going to get right into the ins and outs of what it means to do live ops on a mobile game. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Hi. Yeah, thanks.
Hey, Nate. It's nice to be here.
It's nice to have you here, too. So why don't we just start off, if you could tell me, who are you guys? What are you doing? What do you do here? Where do you come from?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start. As you met Nate, you mentioned I'm the Director of Data Platform and Analytics here, which means that most of the data people, in fact, probably all of the data people would report to me, with the exception of a couple key people. And that also means that the direction of how we use data, what systems we use and things, that's all under my purview, and how we remain data-driven. I have an interesting background in the sense that I was doing data before data was cool. Data is kind of one of those things where it showed up in the last, like, let's say 5-6 years in the gaming industry and maybe the last 10 years in technology in general. Chase Manhattan Bank CEO, I forgot his name, is famous for saying, for being quoted on Wall Street Journal, I believe, which is that they have better accounting of their toilets than their data. So that just gets to show you kind of like, that's kind of how data fit in the, you know, in technology and in the industry and banking, like in all of these critical sectors where we now view data as critical, right? Only 10 years ago. So it's a new thing. And I was lucky enough to have a degree in data, basically. I have a degree in statistics. So I was doing like some of this stuff just before gaming had even thought about doing it or had just barely started doing it, which is actually what got my foot in the door. I've always wanted to work at a gaming company, so I was applying for them. But positions like data analyst, data scientist just didn't exist. There was no recruiting, nothing. There's just no one wanted any of that stuff. But free-to-play games started to get popular. And these companies were the ones looking for these people. I eventually got my foot in the door with Wargaming, actually, in the Seattle, you know, game zeitgeist, let's say. And from there, I was able to learn with Wargaming, because Wargaming was not data mature, right? And they were becoming data mature. They were hiring the talent. They were finding, they were hiring like these super intelligent people from like Sony and from these huge Google and from all these huge companies to learn how to do it. And I got to learn with them. What that translated to is that eventually I ended up here at Colibri Games, and I had learned a lot of the lessons the hard way and the fast way, which is the fail fast methodology at Wargaming. And now here at Colibri, I can kind of try out my vision for data stuff and how to operate games using data at Colibri Games. That's what I'm doing here. And so what you'll hear about in this podcast is like the way we do it because of the lessons I learned in the past from other gaming companies.
Yeah, as you said, Nate, I'm the Director of Engineering for IT, for Platform and IT Services. That means my teams are basically, on the one hand, taking care of all the IT infrastructure that we need to be operable as a company. So doing automation stuff, running our servers, running our clusters, making sure that everything is available and reliably working. And on the other hand, I'm also overseeing the our backend development efforts, because we, beginning of this year, started to explore this area a bit more. We started a new team, which is also developing our LiveOps platform. So we're going to talk a bit more about that today, I guess.
Thank you. That was awesome. Christian, could you tell us a little bit about your journey into LiveOps?
Yeah, sure. My history is a bit different, because I kind of stumbled somehow into gaming and games, because I was not really particularly choosing the area. It was more like, to start at the beginning, during my studies, I did kind of my own startup project around the same time when Idle Miner Tycoon was released. So when Colibri Games, or Fluffy Fairy Games back then still, was founded. And through some random connections, I got to know the founders at the time, or shortly after they released Idle Miner Tycoon. And we had some discussions over the time, and it was like Fluffy Fairy Games was a crazy story in the city where it was founded, in Karlsruhe. It was like all over the news. It was like the startup around there. And sometime later, I think 1.5 years later, I had a talk with the founders. I was like right at the end of my studies. I was looking for a job, and somehow it worked out. And then I actually moved across many different areas in the company. So I started off in backend development and did some work there on the Alemannia Tycoon team. Then I moved over to DevOps because we were needing someone in there who can support us or who could support all the game projects with their build engineering stuff, which gave me quite a good overview over the company's infrastructure, over how we handle things in our with our cloud applications and so on. And then, yeah, over the years, we of course scaled the company a lot. We grew a lot. We hired new people, which gave me the chance to participate in the recruiting process, to build up the structures in the team, and eventually to lead the team.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you here. Tell me a little bit more. When you're saying the back end, what is that specifically in our case?
So we have our games out there, the client that our players are playing. And we have certain services that are only available when you're online, or some certain functionality that requires some things to happen in the backend on our servers. And our backend is basically a collection of services that provide certain functionality or certain capabilities to the games.
So jumping back over to, like, I guess the broader topic of live ops, can you guys tell me, I feel like live ops as a term gets kind of bandied about a lot in games, especially these days, and especially since so many games and platforms sort of have like built-in systems that allow you to communicate, you know, with a server and make updates and stuff like this. So I'd like to know specifically, like, what you see as the definition of live ops, like how you define it, and maybe also specifically what the Colibri Games interpretation of live ops is.
Yeah, so I guess with live ops in general, I would say that there's two types of game businesses, right? There's games as a product, and then there's games as a service, right? And games as a product typically is like a vision created by some designer or some, you know, visionary to deliver a game experience that is like very like encapsulated and is very specific. It's something that they want to do. Maybe it's for artistic reasons, or maybe it's for financial reasons, like a football game versus like a story-driven game like God of War. And those are games as a product because they're encapsulated experiences that are sold as a singular price, or maybe a singular price with some expansions, but generally that's about it. However, there's the other side, which is games as a service, and this is where we fit in general. Live ops, for me, is the act of operating a game that is a service rather than a product. That means it is responding more to what players want or what they want to do, and also responding to market conditions in near real time or as close to real time as we can get, which means that the game lives, and that's why it's called live ops, which means it changes over time. So the game now is not the same as it was 4 years ago or 2 years ago or even 3 months ago. And it continuously changes and evolves with whatever requirements the game business has, as well as what players might want or do. So that's, for me, what live ops means, is operating a game in live service and allowing the game to change over time. Even though it contains the same title, the game is no longer the same as it was when it first released.
Do you think that the way that we're approaching live ops is significantly different than other studios?
So in general, I think live ops is one of those things where the way you do it is very much dependent on what you need to be doing at the time. And that doesn't really mean that what you're doing is necessarily unique. It's just more about like the timing and when you're doing it and why you're doing it that makes it unique, rather than the actual operation of doing it. So things like what Christian's team is doing is like, these technologies have been around for a while and they're used for different purposes in all the different industries. So it's not like the technology's new, right? It's the way we use it and why we're using it and what we're putting in it, right? That changes it. And that's dependent on the business itself. But in general, I don't think it's that different, right? Things like putting things on sale, like putting something on sale on the Steam store, that's a live ops operation, right? That's trying to drive sales by putting something on discount. It doesn't mean it's a game thing. Their service is the store itself on Steam, right? But we have a store in our games, being a game with a store in it. So we would do the same thing. That's still a live ops operation for us, even though it just happens to be encapsulated in the game of Idle Miner Tycoon or Idle Restaurant or whatever. So in the nutshell, it's the same as operating any other retail business. The things that we do that are probably unique would be our player forwardness, in the sense that we're also delivering features and gameplay this way, maybe not necessarily dynamically through a backend service yet, but we are definitely trying to change it so that we have never repeated an event mine, for example. Our event mines have been unique for the entire time Idle Miner has existed.
Yeah, let's drill in a little bit there. Like, so concretely for people who are listening, what do we actually offer that is part of our live ops? Like, how would a player experience the Colibri's approach to live ops?
I guess one of the biggest things that you notice if you're a player, if you're looking from like the third person God view of Colibri games and you don't see time, is that when a player installs, they will see a different version of the game simply because by the time they install. Again, the event mines are never repeated, at least not yet, which means that someone who installed at the beginning of this of Colibri Games Idle Miner Tycoon would see the cheese mine, right? And who installed like a year ago might see like the unicorn mine or something like that. And that will only be unique to them. And same thing with the event season. Event seasons are rarely repeated, right? And the themes and the general look and feel, right? Similarly, Ancient Continent did not exist for players who started the game way back in the day, but now exists for players who have been playing for 2 years, which means that, and generally that feature was created for people who have been playing for a long time, which means that you need to have invested the time to even enjoy that content. Already that shows that it's changed, right? Is that depending on when you installed and also how long you've played has changed how you experience the game.
Christian, can you tell me, like, you know, you've been at Colibri for a fair amount of time. How have you built up the components or worked on building up the components that support our live ops? Like, how have you seen, like, I guess we can maybe give a bit of a history lesson for like what Colibri was back in the day, back when it was still maybe Fluffy Fairy Games. Like, this was a long process, I think, to get to the stage that we're at now. Could you maybe, you know, talk a little bit about what that actually looked like, you know, for our listeners?
Yeah, sure. I think with the company history and also with LiveOps, it's been kind of like an evolution throughout the past few years. So I joined the company about 3.5 years ago, I would say. So I lived through the journey for most of the history of the company. And I think we changed a lot since then. So at the very beginning, with the release of Idle Miner Tycoon, we focused quite a lot on keeping the feedback loop with the community as short as possible and focus a lot on this player centricity in general. So we were introducing this tight weekly release schedule to be able to push out new updates and react to the community as fast as possible. And I think, that's what we try to carry on with LiveOps as well, to make it even faster to customize the game and to make it even more personalized for individual play experiences. So we started with the weekly update schedule, and we also quite soon after that, I think, started to experiment with certain time-limited events or the event mines. And we carried on the concept and over time tried out new tools, new solutions that are out there in the market to realize more of these, use cases that we have in mind to make the games more player-centric, to make the games more personalized to what individual players want and need. That's why we used the last years to, set the right foundation when it comes to the data that we gather to get more insights about our players. And that's why we focus now a lot on building up a solid platform that suits our specific use cases, because we tried a lot of tools and we get to a point where we are, as a company, as mature or as far in our journey that we now are ready to build our own solutions and that we now have like the right foundation for that.
Word. And, you know, kind of like dovetailing from that, let's talk about what that solution is and that platform. So we're pretty excited out here because we've been building this live ops platform. What does that actually look like? Like, who's going to use this live ops platform? You know, how is it going to function in the machinery that is Colibri?
So we have our games and we have certain features in the games, right? For example, the event nights. And we want to be able to change these features on the fly with ideally just a mouse click. Without that, we need to go through the whole, let's say, conventional update process of creating a new feature, bundling up in a new release of the game, pushing the release out, waiting for our players to update. That's a more traditional way of handling things. That's game as a product, as Chris described it earlier. What we want to do now instead is that we take these features, we again, build them, bundle them up, but we push them out to our players in real time, basically. So we put them live, we decide what players should see what version of a feature, and then they just see it.
And what's the advantage of this? Like, why would we want to do this? Why do the players want to experience it that way?
For our players, that means we can customize the game on the fly. So a player, and we can also decide what a player should see in the game on the fly. That means a player starts a game, to play it, reaches a certain milestone, and then we can dynamically decide how the game should behave from that milestone on, basically based on the behavior of the player so far and also based on certain attributes that we get from the player. And we can also say that we can also easier determine that certain segments of players should see different things in the game.
Chris, is there anything you want to add?
Well, yeah, I'll give my two cents on this one as well, which is as far as how it benefits the players, as Christian said, like there's part of it, which is they get a customized experience, but why would they want that customized experience? Is that we make the basic assumption that every player is a bit different. You know, depending on what country you live in, what your, you know, price elasticity or your ability to spend might be, right? What your engagement might be like, how often you're on the train, all of that matters. And they're all different depending on who you are. And our game being idle and quite feature rich means that we can probably start to optimize what you see in the game for you such that you are engaged, which is actually at the end of the day, how the company benefits from it. The company benefits from it because a player is only a customer if you're playing. Right. We have, you know, if you're not playing, you're not paying is the way I would always say. If, you know, we're at the end of the day, it's still business. We still need to make money somehow. Right. And our primary interest is not necessarily to make money, but to make money because you enjoy the game. And you can show that you're enjoying the game because you're playing it. Right. So we need you to play. Right. At the end of the day, we want you to play and we want you to enjoy playing. So the customization feeds into this part. As far as another benefit for the company, of course, is that games are largely experimental, right? You know, you cannot predict that an entertainment product will be successful. So you need to just try and fail. This is kind of where the data part comes in, right? Which is you only know you've tried and failed if you push it to the player and you see what they do with it, if they engage with it, if they don't engage with it. And going back again to players to transcentricity idea is that only the most vocal haters and lovers will say something on like a feedback channel, but data gives a voice to the silent majority, which is most people don't say anything, but we still need to see what the silent majority thinks about it. So we use the data to feedback and then we get some feedback and we can largely understand our experimental process and learn upon it and see what is popular and what is not popular for the players themselves.
So having built this, now that you know how the proverbial sausage is made, what tips would you have for people who are aspiring to build similar live ops platforms? You know, what would be your tips for building and running a live ops platform?
I think you should determine at first what kind of requirements you have for live ops, because there are like depending on your company size, it might not be the best way to really go for running your own platform. I think we historically, or what is quite unique about Colibri Games historically, is that we relied quite long on out-of-the-box solutions. So we didn't build what was not really necessary. We didn't put a lot of time and effort into building our own tooling if it was not really the time for it, and it was if we didn't really have strong needs for it. And I think that's something that helped us quite a lot and helped us being successful, because we were always focusing on, let's say, on sticking to the main purpose and investing efforts where they are really needed. As I said, we only decided to go for our own platform because we saw that we have like very specific use cases that we couldn't find any tools for that match them, that could that help us to really realize them in the way that we want to realize them, and that we need to innovate here and develop our own tool, our own way of doing this, because it's, I mean, LiveOps is not a newest topic, but it's still a fairly new topic. And there's like every game, every company has their own, let's say, definition or imagination of it. And that's why we went for our own platform, which also comes with quite some obstacles, because we never did anything comparable before. So as I said, we mostly relied on out-of-the-box things in the past when it comes to our game backend, for example. So this poses quite a lot of challenges on us, and we now at first need to work or build the right framework for being able to really realize something like that. But it's going quite well.
It sounds like with this, a lot of it, particularly for newer game teams, is going to be coming down to taking baby steps. Like, I think, you know, if we were to take a survey of some of the larger studios out there, yeah, they can build a live ops platform, you know, probably fairly quickly, and they're going to know exactly what they need. But like, just looking back at the journey of Kolibri, like some of our earliest forays into live ops, you know, we mentioned the cheese mine. These were things that were done very like carefully and without like a huge amount of over-engineering. Like, it sounds like that's a awful time sink. Like you mentioned that we used a lot of tools that were good out of the box. And it sounds like that's a good way to avoid, you know, doing like crazily over engineering something for live ops, and just to really hone in on what is going to be effective in the game that you've built. Specifically in our case, it sounds like, you know, in the beginning, instead of going down the route of, oh, we're gonna like quickly A/B test like a bunch of different offers and then like try a bunch of different, you know, super managers. For those unfamiliar with super managers, I'd recommend maybe playing Idle Miner Tycoon. But we focused first on just making event mines work, activating event mines, making sure that the players really enjoyed that. So really it sounds like it kind of comes down to taking these baby steps. Would you say that's an accurate analysis of it?
I would actually disagree with the first part that you say, that other companies are already capable of just, or are maybe a bit, that it's more straightforward for other companies to build up their own live ops platform. Because I think if you have a game and you want to do live ops, you always need to start somewhere, and you cannot just press live ops on and it's there and it's working. I think you have to take smaller steps and adapt the game and the game experience to what you actually want to achieve with live ops, and also see whether it's working for the game. Because I think we also used the time the last couple of years to learn, or we had to use the time to learn what our players actually need over time, and how they experience the game, how they perceive the game, and where it actually makes sense to count on levels.
And that is an excellent segue into my next question. So a big part of our identity as Kolibri is that we want to be the largest player-centric game company in the world, with our subcategory focus on idle games. So at Kolibri, we really put player centricity first. Can you guys tell me a little bit more, maybe starting with Chris, how we're using data to focus on our players?
Sure. So as I mentioned before, the biggest value to data is the fact that it gives a voice to the silent majority. Most people don't say anything. What they do is they vote with their wallet, they vote with their play, they vote with their behavior. And that's how they vote, right? You know, if they like the game, they're playing it a lot. If they don't like the game, they're not playing it at all, right? They disengage very quickly. And data tells you all of these things about what the typical player will do. And something that's quite interesting about like player centricity is people tend to have a very limited scope about player centricity. And I mean this in all ways, including myself as a gamer, right? You think about World of Warcraft and you think of like, okay, what kind of content you're making for who? And people typically are like, there's not enough raids. And you think about like that's only responding to like the 10% of people who raid every week, right? Whereas there are hundreds of other players who do other things in World of Warcraft, right? Hundreds of millions of other players, sessions rather. There's, millions of players who do other things in World of Warcraft. So data gives you a lens into all the other activity that isn't your most hardcore or to the people who are complaining the most, for example. So it gives us a more balanced view of what people want, right? And this goes back to like learning what people want, right? Which is at the beginning, we were very community focused, right? We were very lightweight. We weren't using data for that much. And we were reacting to the most vocal people. And that does work for a time. Your most engaged players, your VIPs and things like that, they are very, very important for the business as well as for the game itself. Right? They are your most vocal advocates, so to say. So they are very, very important. But as you grow and you need to scale the company out to a larger and larger service, you need to start paying more and more attention to the people who aren't saying anything. And that's where data comes back in. So we started balancing and switching back and forth between community feedback and data feedback on what we decide to do with LiveOps here. So this is kind of what I mean by like going into things like new features and stuff like that. I can't really speak about exactly what we will do, in this information. But the idea behind it is we want to see what everybody does, not just what our most engaged people do, and make a decision based on that, right? Because we want the game to be good for everybody who installs the game, not just for the people who are the most engaged.
That's a good answer. Christian, is there anything you want to add there?
Yeah, actually, something popped in my head. I can maybe give some perspective from the past, because I still remember in the very beginning, I was part of the Idlemania team. And we used to have this weekly community feedback reviews where our community management team presented. I think we're still doing this, but in the past it had more weight where they presented the player reviews, the player ratings, and what are the most trending issues that the players are facing. And that's basically what we built our prioritization on, at least a big part of what we used for prioritizing what we're going to do next. And today we don't need to, today we use data for that. Today we have like events that tell us whether what issues the users are facing, where they experience problems in the game, how far they are when experiencing those issues, and so on. And we have way more context to really make these decisions on, apart from some Google Play reviews and gut feeling, basically. And I think, yeah, there's a lot that changed since 3 years ago. It's amazing.
It is. Speaking of which, like in what... if we kind of look, industry trends within LiveOps, what direction do you see LiveOps developing over the next few months or years? And what are our plans for the future? How do they fit into this arc?
So I think there's a couple things as far as industry trends is concerned. One of them would be the reaction to GDPR and privacy and the CCPA from California. That's a thing, right? It's how you use data. Before, what we used to do in LiveOps is we used to go like get an email address and send you an email campaign, right? And send you, or like even older fashion back in the 60s, you would literally send people mail into your home address, right? So it would go as far as using your demographic information and targeting you very specifically this way. And we're much more moving into the realm of what defines you as a player is not who you are, but what you do. That means activity is what defines you. And reacting to activity is a lot more difficult than doing the simple thing like sending an email, but it's also more accurate. And what I mean by accurate, it means that there's a lot more data and there's a lot more data you can use to react to what you're doing. And like I said, you're voting with your behavior, with what you do, you're not, and with your wallet, not voting with the fact that you are someone in America, right? And the idea is that we can use things like machine learning, And we can build recommendation engines to have like automated processes that learn your behavior over time and adjust iteratively based on what you do, what kind of habits you build, right? And we can do this en masse or in very small volumes. And we can do this depending on, you know, either by machine or by human, by hand. But it is very like about what you do, not who you are. And this requires processing to be quite advanced, right? Because analyzing every single click you do is quite difficult. We don't do that at Colibri Games, but some companies do, right? And analyzing every click, you can't do that by hand. It's just too difficult, but you can do it by machine. And so the industry is moving into a smarter, more anonymized way of doing things by using player behavior to identify what makes something valuable for a player. And then, of course, serving content, which is still created by hand, right? You can't replace a designer with a machine. The designer is still a designer. This is still a creative process, right? The game is still a creative exercise. So, but you can serve that content based on their behavior to people who it's most relevant for. So I think this is, for me anyway, from a data-driven perspective, where the industry is going for live ops is creating more dynamic content using your behavior data and using feedback loops such as handmade content as well as machine-made or machine-decided, rather, not made, machine-decided content to customize the game for the player.
Yeah, I would actually jump in here. And I think machine learning is one side that is kind of part of our vision where we want to carry live ops to. So as I mentioned earlier, we want to personalize the game experience for individual players according to their behavior. What's also important for us is that in the past we used live ops or we applied live ops pretty much only for Idle Miner. And we also want to scale that up for our other games. So our game portfolio grew over the last couple of years. We're adding new games now at we scaled up the tempo of releasing new games quite a lot. And we, of course, also want to make this approach to live ops scalable for all the games so that we don't need to reinvent the wheel for every game, but can use our tooling in a scalable manner across all the games that we're producing.
Awesome. So our games are free to play, like most larger mobile games out there, but also a live game. So these are kind of two concepts that seem to be pretty interconnected, but not necessarily dependent on each other. Can you sort of explain the relationship, what a free-to-play versus live game is and how they relate?
Sure. So free-to-play refers to a business model, and live game refers to a design philosophy, let's say, or a product philosophy. That's why they're able to be disconnected. So a live game, like I mentioned before, or you know, as mentioned, is that a live game is often a game that is serviced, which means that it changes over time, right? And the player experience is unique depending on when you started the game and how long you play it. Free-to-play is a business model where the game is free to install, which means there's no upfront cost, but we want to keep you engaged as long as possible so that we eventually get something back from you, either whether it's ad revenue or purchases back, right? But it means that you can have a live game that's retail. So Destiny, World of Warcraft, right? FIFA, all of these are typically live games. These are games that change over time with balance changes, new content, et cetera. Sometimes, most of the time, even free content. These are not things you pay for like in a DLC model, right? That are also have an upfront cost, usually $60 or 60 euros or whatever in your region, right? So it's about the upfront cost itself and where the value is extracted from the customer. Typically, live games that are also retail has to do a lot with how the company wants to generate the money. So one of the things that comes up a lot in like AAA, for example, is that the $60 price tag has not changed due to inflation or price elasticity, and the games have only gotten more expensive to make. That's a typical argument you hear now. I can't really speak with authority on this, but it is very much the thing you hear. So publishers are typically trying to get more money out of you than the $60 box price, but they know they can't really change that price, right? Because games are getting more expensive. And typically, if we were to make the same margins as we were to make 10 years ago on a AAA game, you'd have to charge like $120 or something like that. No one would pay that, right? So they need to get the value out of it somewhere else. That's typically why someone does a live game. Sometimes they just do it because they want to. Team Fortress 2 that does it this way. You know, Destiny did it this way. They just wanted to run it as a live game just because they were invested in it as a developer. We do it, again, like I mentioned before, because a player that isn't playing will never pay us, will never generate revenue. So we need them to do that. That's why they're typically interchangeable or they're typically interlinked, let's say free to play and live, is that it's just the necessity of the business. But there are free to play games that are done out of like just charity. Sometimes you just make the game and make it free to play because you just want it to be that way and you don't care about the money. And that happens from time to time. And then you don't have a live game necessarily in that case.
Well, guys, this was awesome. I want to thank you so much for joining us today for this lively discussion about live ops. This is super informative. I think our listeners today are going to get a tremendous amount of useful tips and tricks about how to build live ops for their own games, how to think about live ops when it comes to making it community focused, and what it really means when you're building the infrastructure necessary to support this type of games as a service. So I want to thank both of our awesome guests, Christopher Ling and Chris Stoller. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, good to be here. Thanks.
What a pleasure. Thank you, Nate.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. Be sure to share with a friend.
And make sure to follow us on social media and subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app.
We'd love for you to get in touch and find out more about the types of topics that you'd like to hear about and what would be most interesting for you.
And you can catch us again in 2 weeks' time for the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.